So if they wanted to use the land for the benefit of the community, it's not through third party, especially not through shady third party people, to investors who have a criminal record, not through an unknown company that was created on the day the deal was signed, and not through a company that has clear ties, as Hagop explained, to Atiret Kohanim and the settler industry.
When people listen to the podcast, they have to understand that the Armenian community always maintained good relations with all the communities in Jerusalem, because we are part of Jerusalem, and there are so many other communities in Jerusalem that they are part of the mosaic and the beauty of the city.
Welcome to the show today, where we are finally getting around to releasing part two of one of the most complex and multifaceted issues out there in Jerusalem, the Armenian parking lot land deal. So over a month ago, I interviewed Hagop Jernazian and Setrag Balian, who are two young activists in the Armenian quarter in Jerusalem. We spoke about the potential sale of a plot of land in the Armenian quarter called the Cow's Garden and the potential transformation of that parking lot into a 7-star hotel. This is anything but a straightforward land deal. It could actually mean the end of the Armenian community and the diminishing of the presence of Christians in Jerusalem. So in case you are jumping into this Inside Scoop Jerusalem podcast a couple weeks later or months later or even years after I've recorded this, and suddenly you happen upon part two of an episode and you're like, okay, what is this all about and where is part one? So I'll link part one in the show notes, so you'll definitely be able to find that out. But nevertheless, I am going to give a little rundown here and anyway, so in case anybody did hear part one, or even if you didn't, here's just like a little refresher course. All right, so in part one, we covered the history of the Armenian quarter. Like, in other words, why is there an Armenian quarter in Jerusalem? It's one of the four quarters of the Old City, and it's the only one named after an ethnic group or, you know, a country, and not a religious group. But the Armenians are also Christian, and Armenia itself was the first nation in the world to declare Christianity its national religion, and that happened in the year 301 AD. And since then, Armenians have been making pilgrimages to Jerusalem to understand more about their faith, and since then have maintained a continuous presence here in the Holy Land for 1700 years. And they're on this land that's owned by the Armenian Orthodox Church here. And it's not just in the Armenian quarter, but also downtown Jerusalem itself and in other areas of the country. So church land is supposed to be there to benefit the community. But in 2021, it was revealed that this huge plot of land, it's the largest open air space in the Old City, that it was leased to a company that plans to build a hotel. So what's at stake, aside from the presence of the Armenians and the Armenian community? Well, there are five homes, the seminary where Armenian priests or priests from priests in training will come and study here. Then there's a meeting hall. There is a shop, and possibly a restaurant is also included in this deal. But it's all part of the livelihood of residents of the quarter. But the plot thickens. It's not just any developer who was leasing this land, but it's a Jewish, Israeli, Australian businessman. So the question is, are there Jewish land reclamation groups behind this man and his company? So we're going to get to that in part two. And what's more, if you did listen to part one, you know that the interview was cut short by a knock on the door. And we weren't sure if we should reveal who knocked. Who was in the Armenian quarter expressing solidarity with the community that then just came and knocked on the door? Well, you got to listen to find out. So without further ado, here is the much anticipated part two. All right, so I am back here with Setrag Balian and Hagop Janarzian for part two of the Armenian land deal that we were talking about a couple weeks ago. And so anyway, we left off with a little bit about the price of the deal that was in the contract, and that it seemed a bit suspiciously low, you know, for the Armenian community and for the patriarch to sign a deal. So can you explain a little bit what was the contract and why are people opposed to it?
The contract in of itself is a very bad contract. It's a very wrong contract and it's an illegal contract. So once you're claiming that this contract is illegal, you cannot say, okay, but this point is well, this point is bad, this is worse. No, the whole contract is a sham and it's a ridiculous contract, be it legally, it has a lot of loopholes, be it financially, it does not make sense at all for this piece of land that is worthless, priceless. And this is the same defrocked priest who claims this in an interview, that this is the most expensive piece of land in the world, if not Jerusalem and the Holy Land. So $300,000 annual rent or whatever, $2 million lump sum, it's completely ridiculous. And of course, it endangers, as we say again and again and repeat, the Christian and Armenian presence in the old city of Jerusalem.
No, that's something I want to get back to for sure. I think for me, that's like the biggest point of this whole issue. But why do you say it's illegal? What about the contract is illegal?
Okay, so the Armenian Patriarchate of Jerusalem works as follows. You have the head of the church, which is the Armenian Patriarch of Jerusalem. Today we have the 97th Patriarch, Nurhan Manugyan. And just a point of information, which is the only uninterrupted patriarch. The Greeks ruled from Constantinople for a while. The Latins for 6-7 centuries used to rule, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem used to rule from Rome. So we're talking about the Armenian Patriarch of Jerusalem, and he has around them a governing body that is called the Holy Synod, which is comprised of 8 priests. And then you have the broader St. James Brotherhood, which is basically like the Senate or the Congress, and is comprised of more or less 30 priests, depending on the period. So any lease, and this was a law enacted according to the bylaws of the Constitution in 2005 under Patriarch Torkom Manugyan, re-ratified in 2006, and in 2015 under the same current patriarch, it was ratified again. And it says that any commercial real estate deal above 25 years, so from 25 to 49 years, has to be signed by not only the patriarch and the grand vicar, but also the head of the synod and the head of the St. James Brotherhood. The two letters were not acquired. So the head of the synod and the head of the St. James Brotherhood did not sign on this contract. They even were not made aware of the contract. And there is a letter signed by 17 members, so a majority of the St. James Brotherhood, opposing the deal and declaring that they were not made aware of the deal until after it was signed. Furthermore, so we're talking about a contract that is 49 years, automatically renewable, unless the lessee does not wish to, so the private company in this case. So this is a de facto, for the Patriarchate, a 98-year lease. And any lease above 49 years is completely forbidden. So here there's not even a question of whether he had the authority or who should have signed, who shouldn't have signed. Above 49 years is completely illegal according to the internal bylaws and the constitution of the Armenian Patriarchate.
Okay, but could they argue that the first 49 years are within the law?
No, because from 25 to 49, they lack the authority to sign.
From 25 to 49, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So in both cases, they lack the authority, even if they take it as 49 because they found, in their opinion, a small loophole. Uh-huh. But it is not a loophole, since even those procedural requirements were not met.
All right, so but that's a church law, or at least a local church law. Mm-hmm. Will that stand up in an Israeli court?
Yeah, internal laws, as long as they do not go against any national laws, they mm-hmm. are accepted. And I mean, the church is recognized as an institution, and so are its bylaws and its constitution. Mm-hmm. I mean, any NGO, for example, or any other institution that is created in the state of Israel has to present its internal bylaws and its procedural laws and all of that. That is how a patriarch is actually elected, through the internal bylaws, which is later recognized by the governments of Jordan, Palestine, and Israel.
Okay. All right. So now walk me through on a practical level. Hagop, tell me, like, what will it look like? Let's say this deal goes through according to the blueprint they even presented, right? They put a blueprint into City Hall, into Jerusalem municipality. And what is it look like compared to right now?
So basically, the blueprint presented to the Jerusalem municipality by the company is not the whole picture and is not the whole map, because it shows only the community parking lot and the 5 residential houses. The original blueprint, which we never saw, the map, includes the garden of the patriarch, includes the parking lot, and the seminary hall, which is 11,500 square meters. So basically, the company presented maybe a wrong map to the municipality, which includes only the parking lot and the houses without the other parts, which here it shows also that there are some loopholes and some illegal ways to take over the other parts, which the patriarch claims that they never signed on a map, and they never, and the patriarch claims that he wasn't aware of the other properties included in the deal, and he was only aware of the community parking lot and the houses. The Armenian gardens, the cow's garden, is an integral part of the community and the church. And the church and the community use it daily. They use that area daily. For example, the seminary, the houses that community members live in, the parking lot. People think it's just a parking lot. It's not just a parking lot. It's a land which we as Armenians, we owned it for more than 500 years. And we mentioned it in the community lawsuit that this land is owned by Armenians for more than 500 years and is trusted to the community. And also, this land connects the Christian and the Armenian quarters, because behind the buildings on the land, behind the seminary buildings, it's Jaffa Gate. And Jaffa Gate is also under great danger and under great threat of settler takeover. And if Jaffa Gate will be taken over by the extreme settlers, and the Armenian quarter, that part of the Armenian quarter will be taken over, so both quarters will not have the direct let's say connection between the two. So it shows you that it will have a great impact on the Armenian and the Christian communities together. So it may change it will change the life, the community life, the church. And it will force people to immigrate. For example, I had a conversation with one of the community members weeks ago, who is an active member with us in the Save the Ark movement, and he said that if we lose the case, hopefully not, I mean, we are doing everything possible that we'll not, but if we lose the case and it will turn out that we are losing the land, so he will immigrate from here, and many others as well. But we are concentrated on strengthening our case and not making people think of immigrating and leaving this place.
Well, how do you know, or do you know for sure, that there are settlers behind this particular sale, that it's not just a great business deal?
It's not a great business deal. I mean, I cannot consider it as a business deal or a commercial deal, because it's not. As Setrag mentioned, there are so many articles in the contract that they absolutely put the patriarchate in financial danger, and it will not have positive outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So why we think there are settlers behind the deal? First of all, the picture, the famous picture of the two developers, George Warwar, the Arab Christian, and Danny Rotman, the Jewish Israeli businessman. Both of them, they are the owners and shareholders in the company, Zana Gardens, and they have a nice picture sitting with Mati Dan, who is the head of the Atarit Kohanim settler organization, that are taking over Jaffa Gate and took over other properties in the Old City and East Jerusalem, sitting in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel a year ago or less, having a nice coffee, I guess, and having a nice conversation with nice smiles on their faces. I mean, I don't think they were talking about the weather that day, or they were talking about political situation. I think they were talking about the political situation, but regarding the Armenian side of this property. I mean,
yeah.
This is the first picture we have. The second thing is that when the armed settlers, armed people, you name it, arrived on the 5th of November, the pictures that were taken of the people who arrived at that time, the New Arab Journal newspaper had a very deep investigation about the people who were present. And they succeeded to obtain information about the people. One of them has good ties with the National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir. The second one, as well, and some others, they were involved in many pogroms and attacks on minorities and Palestinians in the West Bank. So you can, I mean, it's just another piece to the puzzle we are completing recently. And also that George Warwar was the one who always said that I'm here to save you from the settlers. So you are saying that there are settlers in the deal. Without saying, you are saying that there are settlers in the deal. I mean, he used to tell to Setrag and me that I'm here to save the Armenians and the Christians. I'm a Christian guy and you have to accept me. And I'm here to save you from the settlers who are willing to take over the property. So it shows you that even if we don't have 100% information about the involvement of settlers, we have 80%, 70% of knowledge that they are involved in this deal. These are pieces from the puzzle we are trying to complete. And another thing, recently another article was published by the New Arab, which shows that, again, about the people who were involved in the 5th of November attack. So you can understand that they have something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, because we were talking before we started the interview, we were talking about how... speaking of Christians and Christian presence, that there's different Christian streams. Like, let's just take the, even among the evangelicals, and that are, more pro-Israel or more pro-Palestinian. And but Christians, why should Christians be interested in this issue? And why is the Christian presence here in Jerusalem important? I mean, if you say like, okay, oh, it's the Jewish state, it's Israel, say, the Jerusalem's our capital, it's the Jewish state. Is it maybe just a lost cause for Christian survival here in the city? Or, why is the Christian presence important here?
I mean, the most obvious answer, it's these lands are the birthplace of Jesus Christ, where he grew up, where he was resurrected 200 meters away from here. And the fact that today it is the Jewish state or Israeli state or however they'd like it to be called, does this mean that it's ethnocentric or theocratic state? Does this mean that only Jews are allowed to live here and that there shouldn't be any other person other than Jews? And the answer to the question is, for these extreme right-wing groups who are today a majority in the government, or at least the coalition in the government, the answer is very clear. Yes, this is the Jewish state, this is the home state of the Jewish people, and there should only be Jewish people on these lands. The importance of Christianity, I think, being present here is obvious to everyone. I mean, since the coming of Christ, there have always been Christians here. Armenians being the first Christian nation, we've always been here. And we should remain here. And of course, this is a Christian issue. And to get back to the settler aspect as well, we were born and raised in Jerusalem. And we see everything that's going around us. And this land did not just become targeted recently, these 2-3 years. This has been a land that has been targeted for the past 50-60 years. And you can talk to the legendary historian Kevor Kintilian, who used to work inside the Patriarchate in the real estate department. And he will tell you thoroughly how there were different attempts of taking over this land. So obviously there is a very clear shift of the way it's done. So before, it used to be the municipality, the mayor, people from the government approaching the Patriarchate and trying to negotiate some sort of deal to get some sort of lands that are not in use, and also mentioning maybe the cow's garden or other important properties. If we take the example of the right next to the Jewish quarter, there was a parking lot that was given and an empty plot of land that was given. So this does not fall out of the sky. This is a clear trend that we've seen since specifically 1967 and the occupation of East Jerusalem, where open areas and Christian properties are being targeted. And this is very obvious because the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate and the Armenian Orthodox Patriarchate are the biggest landowners after the land authority of Israel. So, it does not begin with the Armenian Quarter or the Armenian Gardens, but it might end with it. And this is where it's important. Because Newgate has already been more or less, is being very heavily invested by the municipality. And sometimes they also try to put pressure and apply pressure on that street, on that entrance. For example, recently all the heads of churches decided that because of Gaza, there wouldn't be any major celebrations, no Christmas bazaars and so on. The municipality tried to force a Christmas market on Newgate.
I didn't know that.
To kind of, create that sensation that nothing is going on, the Christians are very happy, uh-huh, and everything is going okay. So Newgate, then you have Jaffa Gate. Jaffa Gate also started as a private company wanting to take over. And then slowly the settlers come in. Again, typical modus operandi of settler organizations. And throughout the years, Israel has privatized the settler industry. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come directly from the government. It comes from these groups such as Ateret Kohanim, who get a lot of funding from the Jewish diaspora and who do basically, the government's bidding. Because this way they can take the heat off the diplomatic pressure by saying, and as they have said when they were asked about the Armenian Gardens and the Imperial, they say this is a purely commercial deal, this is a private deal, and we do not interfere in these deals. So this is a way to absolve, in some ways, the role that the state plays in to acquiring these territories. And finally, lastly, we're in Jerusalem and the Armenian Gardens are on Mount Zion at the summit. This is the top, this is the highest point. So strategically, politically, biblically, in every way, it is very important for, one, the Jewish people as a religion, for Judaism to take a hold of that place, and as Israel, as a state, politically and strategically, to get a hold of that territory.
I was speaking with the Palestinian ambassador to Denmark, Hassassian.
Manuel.
Hassassian?
Yes.
Yeah. And he explained how between the Greek land sale at Jaffa Gate, and if this goes through, how it's become like a de facto final status negotiation. Mm-hmm. And what had failed at Camp David to divide, you know, the old city between, you know, a Palestinian state and an Israeli state, that it's just being done commercially without negotiation. So it's very interesting because Jaffa Gate is the main entrance to West Jerusalem, which is primarily a Jewish population. And that's their main entry to come straight to the Western Wall. And of course, through the Armenian Quarter as well. And if then you've got Jaffa Gate going into Jewish hands and then also the Armenian Quarter, then and it would Zion be Gate. All the way to Zion Gate. Right. It would be like a de facto turnover to Israel, and it would give Israel better negotiating position when if negotiations ever come around again. It may be too late at that point. But it's really politically interesting. Anyway, so where does everything stand right now for the case?
So we submitted our lawsuit, the community lawsuit, on the 18th of February 2024, and we presented two important arguments. As was mentioned, that this deal was done illegally and violated the constitution and the bylaws of the Patriarchate and the St. James Brotherhood. And we, as a community, are using the document signed by the 17 members, which claiming that this deal was done illegally. The second and the most important argument is that this land is a waqf land, and according to the Ottoman law, and which in the Israeli law is accepted as well, waqf lands cannot be leased or sold to third parties or any other party that never received the confirmation or the consent of the beneficiaries, which are the community members in this case. And why the community members in this case? Because 500 years ago, Patriarch Antrias, he was the one who succeeded to both this land through a transaction, and he registered the land in the Sharia court, which is the Islamic court in Jerusalem, as a waqf land. And according to the constitution of the Patriarchate, Article 8, any member of the Brotherhood who wishes to buy a property should register with his own money, of course, should register it as a waqf. And this is what Patriarch Antrias did at that time. He bought part of the property, which today is the parking lot and the five houses, with his own money, and he registered it as a waqf. And he wrote in his will, in the trust, that when he dies, the land will be trusted to his brother. When his brother passes away, to his children and their children, and so on. And when no one will left from his family members, the land is trusted to the Jerusalemite Armenian Christian community. And the second document we succeeded to obtain is referring to the other part of the property, which is today the garden of the Patriarch, the parking lot of the Patriarch, and the seminary, the entire seminary, all the buildings. And that property was bought by Megardich, which is Patriarch Gregory, and he was the one who succeeded to buy that part of the land, and he also registered it as a waqf. And he also mentioned in the trust that the land will be used and is trusted to the members of the Brotherhood and the members of the community equally. So we succeeded to obtain these two documents and present it in the lawsuit, and these documents are now presented in the Jerusalem District Court, and we assume that the first hearing will take place in the next couple of months. But it is also important to mention that during the Ottoman time, it was very difficult to registering a land during the Ottoman Empire was very difficult. It's from this tree to that tree, from this wall to that wall. And we were afraid that we will not be able to succeed in proving that this is the exact land, and the Waqf document that we have in our hands are referring to this land. So we succeeded to obtain a map from the from 1852, I think, or 85, showing that the exact location, because in the Waqf documents it explains you what are the places around the land. For example, it says that from the west, the ramparts of the old city, from the east, the Armenian Patriarchate Road, north, the property which was both 100 years later by Megardich, and it says that there are five cisterns in the land. We succeeded to obtain a map showing the exact five cisterns in the land.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So, these are the documents and these are the arguments we presented in court and in our lawsuit. Both parties, the Patriarchate and Zana, are defendants in the case, because the Patriarchate and Zana both signed the deal, and we are arguing that the Patriarchate had no authority to sign the deal and Zana had no authority to enter into the deal with someone that had no authority. So both are being sued, and both will have to present their statement of defense in the next couple of weeks. And when they present their statement of defense, the court will receive all the documents, will decide who will be the judge, and will decide the date of the first hearing. And then, you know, people ask us, what do you think? What are the chances? We never say chances. We know how we entered the court. We don't know how we'll get out of it. But we are hopeful, and especially that the Waqf and the Ottoman law is recognized and accepted by the Israeli law. And we will do everything possible to obtain other documents and other important arguments to present in court.
Mm-hmm. The Patriarch has said that they sent a letter from the Patriarch, right, canceling the deal or revoking the deal.
Yes, they sent a letter on the 26th of October 2023, less than 10 months ago. That letter is just a letter. It's a cancellation notice. And in order to cancel the deal, both parties should agree on canceling the deal. I mean, the Patriarchate can agree on canceling the deal, but while Zana is refusing to accept the cancellation of the deal, so you have to go to court and let the court decide if the deal can be cancelled or not. So, I mean, their letter that they sent, very well.
Mm-hmm.
It was done following the pressure of the community,
mm-hmm.
but it's not enough.
All right, so hotel, they're calling for, the plans are for a 7-star hotel here on the grounds. Would that be, is there any possibility that that would be economically beneficial to the Armenian community? Jobs or places to live? No? Stay? No? What? Well, tell me. Explain.
If they were that interested in the future of the Armenian community, they would have had it in writing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was promised orally that the Armenians would work in that hotel and they would mm-hmm. be given jobs. But the same promise was made about the parking lot, which is now in the Jewish quarter, or the extended Jewish quarter, as they call it,
okay.
that Armenians would be able to park there. And slowly, not one Armenian car was left in that parking lot.
Mm.
So, again, and then if a hotel is that beneficial to the Patriarchate, why doesn't the Patriarchate build the hotel or the pilgrimage house or the guest house? Does it lack funds? Well, you can use the building as collateral to get the investments or to get the loan from the bank. It's not like anyone comes to build a hotel and puts $25 million cash. They go get a loan based on the collateral of the land and they built the hotel. Then why wasn't the Armenian Patriarchate building that hotel? Why didn't the Jordanians that offered to build the hotel did not build the hotel with a better deal than this one? Why didn't the Armenian businessman from Moscow who came to build the hotel did not get the lease and did not build the hotel? So if they wanted to use the land for the benefit of the community, it's not through third party, especially not through shady third party people, to investors who have a criminal record, not through an unknown company that was created on the day the deal was signed, and not through a company that has clear ties, as Hagop explained, to Atiret Kohanim and the settler industry. You wanted to build a hotel, why not call the Marriott or the Accor Hotels or any other hotel? This is the first point. Second point is parking lot, first of all, is needed much more than the hotel at this point. And to get back to the financial commercial benefit, the commercial benefit that the patriarch should calculate, the patriarchate, is not how many Armenians will get jobs. Is what is the income that this land can bring to the patriarchate if it is used. So let's take the parking lot, yeah? I have a calculator with me, yeah? Let's say we have 280 spaces in the parking lot, yeah? And let's say everyone pays monthly the minimum, okay? Minimum, this is for Armenians, not for everyone, but let's take that. So that's 300 shekels, yeah? You already have 84,000 shekels per month, okay? Let's do that times 12. You have 1 million shekels, and this is the $300,000 annual rent that the patriarchate is supposed...
Now, I'm not very good at math, but that sounds like a lot more than $300,000 a year.
Yeah, it's let me see exactly. No, it's about $280,000 a year, but this is without building anything, without capital investment,
okay,
without just leaving the parking as it is. This is the income they can take with monthly users. If you calculate in the hourly rate that people might pay, or during holidays, you can double even that number. So, financially, again...
No, it's more.
It's 1 million.
It's a million.
A million divided by 3.7 is about $270,000.
Oh, it's, I thought you were saying, but in a year.
In a year, yeah. Which is the...
Oh, it's $300,000 a year, not shekels.
Year.
Got it. See, I told you I wasn't good at math.
Yeah, but it's okay. Kidding. So, a difference of $30,000. And
okay,
it also includes plus 5% of the profits of the hotel, but again... Until the hotel makes profits, first of all, they need to repay all the calculations, and they can inflate their numbers, they can deflate their numbers, and they can end up deducting the 5% loss of the hotel from the rent.
Okay.
So again, the financial argument does not stand, it does not hold for people to imagine, listening to us from abroad, this is equivalent to Times Square in New York, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating, I might be even undervaluing it, because you're talking about Jerusalem, the old city, the most contested piece of land
in the world.
Probably in the world today. And so even more than Times Square, even more than Trafalgar Square, even more than the Champs-Élysées, if you really want to be honest with it. So financial sense, it does not make. That is pretty clear for us. And as employment, there are many employment opportunities for Armenians within the patriarchate today as it is. And with minimal investments, capital investments of lower than $300,000, they can create a lot more jobs for the Armenian community. And the creator of that jobs would be the Armenian patriarchate, not some offshoot or shell company that is registered in both Israel and the UAE. And again, that has so many wrong, quote-unquote, affiliations with it.
Well, now all of this on has actually, if nothing else, we don't know what the outcome will be of the case, but something positive has started. And now you've got an initiative going because of this issue. It's raised awareness all over the world. And there is some kind of initiative that's taken off now that to bring investment into the Armenian community in Jerusalem to strengthen the roots, because it has been dwindling. The community has been dwindling, and it needs like a bit of infusion of life. So can you... we want to end this on a positive note and a call to action. So tell us about what's happening now and how people are interested from abroad and what can be done and what's happening.
No, it's dwindling. That's right. I'm going to take back your words. Dwindling not only demographically, but even intellectually and talent-wise. Nothing is exploited from the human force we have and the human power we have. And of course, first problem is demographics. How do you improve the demographics of the Armenian quarter? people need to get married, get children. People need to come from outside of these lands, from abroad, to come and live and settle in the Armenian quarter as Armenians. This is to increase the demographics. And how do you do that? You also create business opportunities. And so we've been working on a project, as you said, of creating a space for Armenian young entrepreneurs, where we would have a board. I mean, we're already working on it. First thing we do is draw attention to all the Armenian businesses that already exist here. There are businesses that are 100 years old, like my family's actually, I'm fourth generation. But there are also other businesses. A lot of Armenians are shopkeepers, shop owners. A lot of Armenians work in crafts and trade. I mean, as we saw, for the past 200 years, they've contributed hugely to the city. And until today, we have mainly today what are left from Armenian crafts are ceramics and jewelry. We used to have tailors and carpenters and shoemakers and watchmakers. But today, it's more limited to the jewelry and ceramics industry. And so we want, first of all, to encourage, especially given the context today where tourism, I mean, is almost non-existent and a lot of businesses are suffering with the high tax rates and municipal taxes and property taxes. So we'd like to draw attention on those businesses and put a spotlight on them, but also to encourage young Armenians to create their own businesses, to encourage young Armenians to study in the fields that are needed, for example, by the Patriarchate. The Patriarchate is like a mini government. It's a small government. It's a mini welfare state. So there are a lot of jobs that are today currently being done by non-Armenians, which can be done by Armenians. And for that, Hagop is working on a project of scholarships for the young graduates that will be allowed to go study in those respective fields and have a job guaranteed within the Patriarchate. And for the businesses, we're going to create a fund where we would have a pan-Armenian board of directors that will collect funds and also help the businesses marketing-wise, business plans, and so on. So study each case. Everyone who wants to open a business, of course, it's going to be a bit tough. You'll need to present a lot of motivation, a lot of plans, a lot of determination. But in order to be able to create their own businesses. It's always, I mean, more interesting for young people, especially, to create their business rather than to work on a minimum wage salary in Mamela, for example, or other places. And it's a pity. And it takes us back again to the hotel. You know how many Armenians work in hotels? Probably 50% of the young people work in hotels as receptionists, as bellboys, as managers, as financial managers, reservation managers, IT managers. So you already have all the experience, yep, and the people to operate your own hotel. So why give it again? Why give it to someone else to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was the Hilton. Because let's take a bit all the political aspects away from it. Even if it were the Hilton, why?
Right. And a Hilton in the old city, wow, that would be worse than Starbucks.
Exactly. It would ruin the landscape and the beauty.
Right, and the uniqueness. Architectural beauty. The uniqueness of the city and what it is.
And
yeah,
the quarter specifically, yeah, will completely for sure change, I mean, mm-hmm, the picture of the quarter.
Yeah. Okay, last time we were here, we were interrupted at the end. Well, it wasn't the end, actually, because of who knocked on the door, we ended the interview. Are we allowed to reveal who that was? Are we allowed to say? I wanted to keep people hanging from the first from part one, and I didn't say anything.
I mean, yes.
Oh, Hagop, you're going to tell us.
We were interrupted by a member of Knesset, Ayman Ode, who was visiting the Armenian quarter the same day. And he interrupted the interview without knowing that we are
here. Right, right. He didn't do it on purpose, right?
He
didn't
do it on purpose, but he interrupted the...
Oh, look, there's another member of Knesset. No, I'm just kidding. Hi. No, it's okay.
No.
It's okay. We're wrapping up.
So he interrupted the conversation and we had to stop the first part, but then we had a very interesting conversation with him.
Extremely.
Honest. And I mean, it's good to be interrupted with the people who can use it, that you can sit with them at the end and have a nice conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that he was here is a sign of support. Yes. So
it is important to mention that, I mean, when people listen to the podcast, they have to understand that the Armenian community always maintain good relations with all the communities in Jerusalem, because we are part of Jerusalem, and there are so many other communities in Jerusalem that they are part of the mosaic and the beauty of the city. And we maintain and we continue to maintain the good relations with the Jewish quarter, with the Muslim quarter, with the Christian quarter, with the Israeli-Palestinian civil societies, with Jews, Muslims, Christians, you name it. Because we believe in Jerusalem that is for all, that everyone can enjoy it equally, that everyone is equal and everyone is enjoying equal rights, living peacefully side by side without any problem. And this is what we did as a community, because recently the other side most probably is doing a massive campaign against the Armenian community of Jerusalem by publishing so many lies in the different newspapers, whether here in Israel or in the US, using us as people who are against the deal because we are forced by different people and authorities, which is absolutely wrong. We are fighting for our existence, we are fighting for our presence, and we are fighting for a just Jerusalem.
That's awesome. Thank you. That was a great summary. And anyway, I have to say, these are the busiest guys I know. And it was extremely difficult to be able to coordinate all of our schedules, but it's because they are working to save not just their future, but their parents' future, their grandparents' future, their children's future, their grandchildren's future, and generations of Armenians to come. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
When I say I appreciate it, I mean it. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.